You may have heard of him. His school kicked him out. Townspeople slashed the tires on the family car and pelted it with eggs. Schoolmates taunted him. Someone fired a bullet through his living room window. What kind of people would subject a child to that? Jian, his mother asks, as she hugs close her shivering child. Now the disease is shutting down his body, system by system, raising colors on him in its advanced like horrible campaign decorations. Yellow when his liver falters, blue for his lungs. The worst of it, his mother says, is that Ryan can never get warm anymore. He wears a jacket, a sweater, furry slippers. A woolen blanket is draped over his shoulders for warmth. But all that isn't enough. Ryan is tired all the time. He spends most of his day sleeping, reading comics, or watching TV. He seldom gets out now because he throws up so often. Despite the fact that AIDS is wasting away Ryan's 60-pound body, he has all the cravings of a normal teenager. His appetite is voracious. He asks for nachos, a steak, and a salad, but by the time it arrives, he can't eat. "Mom, I'm sick," he whispers. Ryan's head slumps forward. The fork slips from his hand. "I'm too tired to eat," he says. In 2 hours, it's time to retire. Jian tucks her child into bed and kneels beside him for evening prayer. She holds his hands in hers as they bow their heads together and pray in unison, "Thank you, dear Lord, for another day." Soon Ryan's eyes begin to close. "I love you, Mom," he murmurs. Neither know if he will see the dawn of the next day.
Central Africa was almost certainly its cradle, and monkeys its probable hosts. No one knows precisely how or why the virus made and moved to man, and no one is sure just where and when it embarked on its intercontinental killing spree. But it lurked in the United States for several years before anyone was aware of its presence. Silent, deadly, perversely prolific, it infected the cells that normally defend against infection, relentlessly destroying the ability to fight off illness. It spread from host to host through the very fluids that serve to sustain and propagate life. Invisibly, implacably, it mounted its invasion, geometrically increasing its terrible toll. Finally, in 1981, the killer was identified, acquired immune deficiency syndrome, or AIDS. Its other name, says America's top health official, is fear. At first, AIDS was a medical curiosity, a gruesome illness that mainly struck homosexual men and intravenous drug users. But now the quote-unquote gay plague has assumed the proportions of a worldwide public health disaster. It could, according to some experts, become one of those infectious diseases that change history. Anyone who has the least ability to look into the future can already see the potential for this disease being much worse than anything mankind has ever seen before. This was a quote from Dr. Ward Cates of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control. The ominous portents are there for all to read. In the years since AIDS was given its name, it has at least doubled the number of its victims every year. No one has ever been known to recover. Once infected, a person is infected for the rest of his life, says William A. Hallstein of Boston's Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Once infected, a person is infectious. It's not safe to assume otherwise. Because of the long period when AIDS lies latent, thousands of people may be infected and infectious without even knowing it. This means that the standard public health measure of quarantine is impossible as a means of bringing AIDS under control. And the disease is clearly not restricted to homosexual or bisexual men. In Africa, it strikes men and women in equal proportion. As time goes by, it will be more evident that this is a sexually transmitted disease that is not limited to one sexual practice. And this is a quote from Dr. Robert Redfield of the U.S. Army's Walter Reed Hospital. Once dismissed as the gay plague, the disease has become the number one public health menace.
What is AIDS? AIDS is acquired immune deficiency syndrome. It's an illness that impairs the body's ability to fight infection, making the body extremely susceptible to life-threatening diseases. What causes AIDS? Researchers have isolated and identified the cause, a virus that's related to a known cancer-causing virus in humans. The virus is especially harmful to cells in the immune system, destroying a particular type of cell and leaving the body vulnerable to infections. Who gets AIDS? Consistently, over the past 5 years, the majority of all AIDS cases have occurred among the following groups: homosexual and bisexual men, 73%, intravenous drug users, about 17%, persons with hemophilia and people who have blood transfusions, about 2%, sexually active heterosexuals, about 1%. What are the symptoms of AIDS? During the incubation period, which may range from a few months to several years, there may be no outward signs that suggest a person is suffering from AIDS. At this point, the test for the antibodies to the virus will show the individual has been exposed. As the illness progresses, symptoms begin to be apparent. If you have any of these symptoms, you should report them to a physician. Scary. People with AIDS may notice severe, prolonged, recurrent, or persistent fever, including night sweats, rapid weight loss for no apparent reason, swollen lymph glands in the neck, underarm, or groin area, consistent fatigue, unexplained diarrhea, white spots or unusual blemishes in the mouth. Is there a cure for AIDS? There's still no known cure for AIDS, although a concentrated research effort continues in hope of finding one.
How can I help? Since the number of AIDS cases is doubling every 12 months, if you don't know someone that has AIDS, before long you will. The question here is, how can I help AIDS victims? Number one, we can learn about AIDS. We need to read up on information about the disease in the past year, Time, Newsweek, Discovery, and other magazines and newspapers have published major articles on AIDS. Understanding AIDS and the disease and symptoms will help you to approach it intellectually and sensitively by interacting with AIDS patients. Number two, we need to accept them. Set aside the fears of homophobia and fears of getting AIDS. View patients first as fellow humans suffering from terminal diseases, and secondly, as homosexuals or drug users. Some victims may have contacted the disease in another way anyway. Maintain an attitude of humility, remembering that we're all capable of sin. If God sent a disease like AIDS immediately upon every human being who is participating in some sinful act, it seems that we all would be on our deathbeds today, says Tony Campolo. Number three is to visit them. Campolo feels that we cannot fully accept AIDS patients until we visit them. AIDS victims tend to be shunned by everybody, even including their homosexual partners. In loneliness, this person suffers. This is an opportunity for Christians to take a risk, expressing love and saying to someone that they care. Number four, help with chores. Since a person with AIDS often is easily tired, simple tasks become challenges, such as cleaning apartments, cooking, doing laundry, running errands. Okay, your help in simple household duties can make a difference. In addition, financial support often is something that they need as well. So if you're in a position to help financially, you can minister in that way. Number five is to listen to them. This is very important. People with AIDS are struggling with the same physical and emotional traumas that any terminally ill patient faces, except the fact that they are experiencing rejection as well. By their friends and family and the church. They need someone to talk to, someone who will simply listen. Allow them the freedom to verbally express their feelings of anger, frustration, and fear. Do not judge these feelings. Simply listen and accept them. And sixth, be prepared to talk about spiritual matters. Like other terminally ill patients, AIDS victims realize that they're standing at eternity's door and may want to talk about God, faith, the afterlife, etc. In the midst of their loneliness and despair, they may be especially open to hearing about God's love, grace, and forgiveness. Be sensitive to moments when it would be appropriate to talk about God. Read a short passage of Scripture or pray. What can I do to help? Number one, listen or learn about AIDS. Two, accept them. Three, visit them. Four, help them with chores. Five, listen to them. And six, be prepared to answer spiritual questions.
Thank you for this opportunity to speak with you on this very serious subject of AIDS. You're well aware of the epidemic. It's worldwide. In science, we call it a pandemic. How many people are actually infected with AIDS, we have no idea. But there's the silent epidemic associated with this, and that's the fear. You've just heard some of the things associated with this particular disease. As we go through things this morning together, we're going to try to understand some of the issues here involved. In the next 2 weeks, you will be discussing AIDS. You'll be talking face to face with people that have worked with individuals with AIDS. And as you have heard, AIDS is a disease called acquired immune deficiency syndrome. That was not its original name. Its original name was GRID, G-R-I-D, gay-related immunodeficiency. And it's interesting, as even as we try to deal with the name, it fosters in our mind all kinds of fears and misunderstandings and misconceptions. So in the process of trying to deal today, we will concentrate on issues primarily in the area of science and medicine. We also say a bit about the theological issues, but later you will hear more from Dr. MacArthur on those. And we also want to foster some personal concerns for these people and also for yourself. So as we proceed today, we want to try to focus on the area of science and medicine. We're going to answer three questions. What is the disease? How is AIDS transmitted? Who gets it? Or what is its scope? So we're going to try to answer what is known as the reporter's questions. We're going to be investigative reporters. If you may, scientific detectives. That's an issue we must personally struggle with because it's an issue that surrounds us. We're going to ask what and how and who of AIDS. Well, let's just briefly introduce myself. Yes, I am a Christian. I recognize Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior, and that I'm a sinner, and that I'm in need of His forgiveness. But I'm also a scientist, and I work in the area of training healthcare professionals, both training physicians, but primarily training a group of individuals called medical technologists. Specifically, I'm an immunologist, and I've studied the pathogenesis of both bacterial and fungal diseases. Some of those diseases are the diseases that AIDS patients get themselves. However, I do not work directly with AIDS. Okay, I've collected information, I've talked with students, I've talked with colleagues that I'm associated with to gather information over these several years since this epidemic has begun. Okay, in order for us to kind of get an understanding, it's obvious that Scripture has a lot to say. We'll leave much of that for Dr. MacArthur, but let's just say in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. This epidemic is not going on unknown to God. God created this system that man may live here and that man may recognize who God is and that we can have a relationship with that God. So when God created in Genesis, man fell. But God created woman before man fell. And we're reminded in Genesis chapter 2, "For this cause a man shall leave his father and his mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they shall be one. And the man and his wife were both naked and were not ashamed." We're reminded God created Adam and Eve. A relationship between a man and woman, not Adam and Steve. A relationship of man and man. So in the process of trying to deal with this, Adam and Eve fell very quickly. And you're familiar with that. And as the book of Genesis takes history and makes it live from God's perspective, we get into Sodom and Gomorrah and get the name for some of the homosexual acts, sodomy. But then, even in the New Testament, man's sin is dealt with in chapter 1 of Romans. Let me just read verse 26 and following. "For this reason, God gave them over to degrading passions. For their women exchanged their natural function for that which is unnatural. In the same way, also men abandoned their natural function of a woman and burned in their own desire towards one another." Men with men, committing indecent acts and receiving in their persons the due penalty of their error. Now it's interesting, yes, that focuses on homosexuality, but you better read the rest of the verse. You better read what else is in there. Verse 30, disobedience to parents. And if you keep reading, what's slanderers, haters, gossips? It's talking about sin. Yes, homosexuality is a sin. Now let's begin to look at some information that I brought to you, and we'll use some slides to assist us. It's interesting in the conversations that you've just heard. We'll reinforce this. Let's look at the first slide. First issue is AIDS is not a new disease. It's newly diagnosed. AIDS has probably been around for at least 70 years. We know for sure at least 10 years. It's not new, but it's a new disease for us. So that's one of the issues we have to come to grips with. Another issue is, what is AIDS? AIDS is a disease of the immune response and of the immune system. And it's interesting, as a scientist, as a matter of fact, I wish somebody would not have taken the term Christian scientist, because I would have liked to have been able to use it. But as a Christian, when you read how David explains how fearfully and wonderfully made man is, the immune system is absolutely phenomenal at what it does. You would not be sitting here if it wasn't for your immune system. You would die very quickly, because you are surrounded. You eat it, you drink it, you live in it. You are surrounded with agents that can cause you harm. You deal with cancer every day of your life, and your immune system gives you protection. And it's absolutely phenomenal in what it does. So as we look at this incredible system that has been developed, okay, even though you can't see, in a way I'm glad you can't see it, because what science have been able to comprehend here is a very complex system. And once again, it gets into concepts of being fearful and wonderfully made. Now, as we look at this concept, we're dealing with an environment of microorganisms, and this is all the different kinds of microorganisms. This is representative of the viruses. And over here, if you could see, here's a man and woman. That's all there is on this earth, is men and women, either grown-up ones or infant ones. Men and women come in contact with this environment. In the process of coming in contact with the environment, the body is made up of systems. Each system has a different defense. So we have a respiratory system. As you breathe, the air of your lungs is filtered. We have a digestive system with enzymes in it. We have a genital urinary tract system for elimination of body fluids and for participating in creation of children. But more importantly, that system gives us a set of natural defense mechanisms. You are naturally defended by that system of intact different kinds of organs that have different chemistry and different anatomy. But the AIDS system here attacks this part of our immune system, the acquired immune system, or the specific immune system. That specific system is made up of cells that are the eating cells, we call them phagocytes, and the cells which are the killing cells, which are called lymphocytes. And that divides our immune system into two parts, the cell-mediated cells and the humoral cells. The humoral cells are called B cells. B stands for bone marrow. These cells are produced in your bone marrow and matured in your bone marrow. They're released to circulate into the lymphoid tissues of your body to respond to your environment, all these organisms, to produce something we know as antibodies. The correct name is immunoglobulin. The other aspect of the immune system is associated with the other cells that we find. It's called the T cell population. There's a little organ right above your heart, just below your throat, called the thymus. Evolutionists for years said this was an organ that was de-evolving, disappearing. It had no function whatsoever. Well, we found about 15 years ago that it has a very great function. That thymus is involved with the maturation of cells produced in the bone marrow called the T lymphocyte, and it's the T cell population that is specifically attacked by this mechanism. Okay, now in order for us to understand this, unfortunately you get involved very quickly with biological and medical terminology. This is the immune system based on the cellular composition and the molecular composition. One of the most incredible fields now for us to try to understand is an area called molecular biology. What do these molecules do? So when we look at the immune system and how it's organized, as we see this system, it starts with the introduction of material into the body. And then there's interaction with these cell types. And as interactions occur, there are molecules that give us protection. Lymphocytes produce something called lymphokines. Antibodies are produced by the B cell. Sometimes the T cells act independently, sometimes the T cells act dependently. So here's one cell that has an H by it, that stands for helper, the T helper cell. The T helper cell assesses the B cell to form antibody. And now what do we have? When we're all done, the T cells and the B cells give us body protection by assisting us in protection of the whole system that we try to deal with. So this is briefly then the immune system that we're looking at that's attacked. Without immune system, you don't have defense. All right, specifically now, in the development of the T cell population, they're produced in the bone marrow. They now move from the blood into the thymus, and they're matured in the thymus. There are a series of hormones produced in the thymus that allow that cell to develop. And it changes. And it specifically moves into the development of the T helper cell. That's the virus recognition cell, so the AIDS virus, the HIV, human immunodeficiency virus, attacks the T helper cell. The T suppressor cell is also found. T helper cells exist in a greater population than do T suppressor cells. So there is now a relationship between these two cell types. It wasn't until 1979 were we able to separate those cell types based on their addresses because of the macromolecules on their surfaces. So we have a series of numbers that allow us to designate this cell. In particular, the T4 cell is the T helper cell. The T8 cell is the T suppressor cell. So the numbers assist us in the identification. So in 1979, we developed the ability to diagnose the disease. Before 1979, we couldn't separate these populations of cells. So we had a problem with this disease in the first place, trying to diagnose what cell type was involved. All right, these two cell types now are involved with war. Okay, the T cells and the B cells protect us, but the T cells regulate that protection. The T helper cells assist. The T suppressor cytotoxic cells repress the immune mechanism. Okay, here is the AIDS virus. And this is actually what it looks like. Obviously, it's not a real picture. You saw the picture on Time. It was magnified 250,000 times just to see the little virus you saw up there. It's a very, very small object. It's made up of macromolecular composition. It's made up of an outside coat, an inside coat, and nucleic acid here. Okay, so we began to understand the agent at which the body is going to go to war with, the immunodeficiency virus. Now, it used to be called HTLV-3. That was the American name. The French had a name, so the World Health Organization had to raise their hands and say, hold it, guys. We don't want you arguing about what the name of this thing is. Let's agree that we'll call it HIV, human immunodeficiency virus. Now, there are several types of them. 1 and 2. 1 is the one we have here in the United States and a major category. Okay, now AIDS is an equal opportunity killer. It's a virus infection. We can now begin to diagnose AIDS by the symptoms that you were just read, but let's reinforce those symptoms. Now some of these symptoms are very common to a lot of diseases, so they have to be taken together in order to diagnose the situation. What do we have? We have weight loss. Okay, and it's weight loss over a period of time. Matter of fact, in Africa, this disease is called Slim's disease. Why? They become so thin that they're walking trellises. And this is what happens to individuals as their disease progresses. So weight loss that persists over a period of time that's uncontrollable. Okay? Unexplained, persistent, recurrent fevers, shaking, chills, and night sweats. When you get material in your lungs, when you sleep at night, in particular, that material tries to come out, and it can't, because your lungs are at rest. In the process, you get night sweats. You get higher fevers at night. Okay? Fever is a normal process that defends the body. In this case, it is an unusual fever, in that it's so difficult to deal with, it even wakes you up in the middle of the night, covered with sweat. Swollen glands. Okay, and these glands can be found anywhere the lymph nodes are found. But the issue here is persistent and unexplained by another illness. So we have to have differential diagnosis. Gland, you get a streptococcal sore throat, you're going to get swollen nodes of your neck. You get mumps, you're going to get swollen cheeks because of the mumps. So swelling of glands is not unusual. Okay, severe prolonged fatigue. Not transitory, not explained by physical activity, substance abuse, psychological disorder. You're tired and you're tired all the time. You heard about Ryan, that young man that was in the later stages of his disease. Could hardly stay awake 2 hours a day. And so you're very tired. Persistent, unexplained diarrhea and bloody stools because of the attack of your immune mechanism. This is a constant diarrheal problem. And that's an obvious problem that needs solution. Okay, persistent whitish coating on the tongue and in the throat, accompanied by soreness and difficulty in swallowing. Heavy, persistent dry cough, not due to smoking, not due to a cold or the flu. Unexplained bleeding from any orifice. Okay, now some of these are, if you looked at the caution symbols associated with cancer, you would see some of these again. Once again, this syndrome is complex. It's difficult. Now you think for a minute the African tribal people have the medical facilities to diagnose this disease. Kaposi's sarcoma. That's a particular cancer, and I'll show you a picture because it's very unique in its appearance. It's also very unusual, was not very common. Development of slow, large nodules associated with this kind of cancer. Okay, and growths that occur on the skin and on the mucous membrane. Inside the mouth, on the skin, may disappear or get larger. They appear as bruises. People might think they might be insect bites or just plain pimples, but that's not the case. So that's the syndrome. Now that's part of the problem. Okay, the next part of the problem is there's a pre-AIDS syndrome, which is even more ill-defined. It's called ARC. Okay? AIDS-related complex. It is a condition caused by the AIDS virus in which the patient tests positive for the AIDS infection. Just a minute, we're going to go through the cycle. When does somebody test positive? Do they test positive initially? Or does it take a while? And we'll go into what we call viral latency. ARC patients have some of the symptoms that we have just seen, but they're less severe. Okay, you diagnose disease based on signs, which are measurable, symptoms, which are things that you have, malaise, you feel bad, fatigue, you're tired. Okay, but they may also have loss of appetite, weight loss, fever, some of the same things we went through. Okay, process now of defining this particular disease, one of the things that's very apparent is this Kaposi syndrome. It's a cancer, it's very unusual. Doesn't occur very much of the time, but it's very common in AIDS patients. So with this particular cancer, this happens to be a patient's foot. You can see these red, hard nodules on the feet. And if we could look at the whole patient, you would see that patient is covered inside the mouth, inside the gastrointestinal tract, inside the mucous membranes with this kind of cancer. Okay. As we have gone through the AIDS complex now, remember the body's immune system is attacked. The immune system protects you against many diseases. Antibodies will protect you against things like pimples, boils, okay? Diseases on the skin. Neutralize the toxins of botulinum so you don't get food poisoning. Okay? Antibodies will give you part of the protection. But the rest of the protection is engendered by the T cells. T cells protect you against fungal diseases, viral diseases, and the intracellular bacterial diseases like tuberculosis. So guess what the AIDS patients get? Those kinds of diseases. They have no protection. Well, first of all, they get cancer because it's the T-cell population that protects you against cancer and does the immunosurveillance on a day-by-day basis, minute-by-minute basis to destroy the cancer cells when they're at the level of 1, 2, or 3. So they get Kaposi's and they get malignant lymphoma. Okay, that's a disease that should not be unheard of by you, because people in California that spend too much time in the sun get this disease. Okay? It's characterized by laying down a melanin pigment in your brain. Okay? Infections. What are they? Well, here are the virus infections. Herpes simplex, you know that one. That's called cold sores. Herpes zoster is associated with a disease called shingles. If you don't get smallpox as a kid, you're going to get, chickenpox as a child, you're going to get shingles later in life. The AIDS patients are going to get these kinds of viral diseases. Now, it's interesting that most of these diseases are listed here are diseases that are common in the environment. As a matter of fact, some of you even have these, and you carry them, and your body keeps them under control. But the AIDS patients can't. They have no hope to keep these under control. All right, they get fungus infections. Candida albicans is carried as normal flora for 30% of the people in this room. So these are in the environment. But the AIDS patients have no hope. They have no protection. They can't protect themselves against this disease. Cryptococcus neoformis is a disease that gets into the body, invades the brain. Okay, over here are the parasites. You may have heard about Toxoplasma gondii because most of you have been exposed. You got a cat or eat raw hamburger or raw meat, you've been exposed. You probably have it. but the AIDS patients can't deal with it. So they can't deal with virus diseases, bacterial diseases, and fungal diseases, and that's why it's so devastating. All right, here's some secondary disease common in the Midwest called histoplasmosis, another parasitic disease. They get lymphomas associated with Hodgkin's-type diseases. They have no T-cell protection. Therefore, they have major problems. Okay, now, we know what AIDS is. AIDS is a virus infection that invades the immune mechanism and destroys that mechanism. Okay, now we want to look and see how AIDS is transmitted. Okay, the transmission of AIDS is primarily by semen and blood. Primarily by sex, whether it be homosexual or heterosexual, from a patient that has it to somebody that doesn't have it. It's also transmitted by blood products. It's also transmitted by intravenous equipment. Not only drug users, but reutilization of intravenous material. For example, have you ever thought about some of the countries, say Papua New Guinea? They got one needle to give their all the penicillin shots for everybody in that community. They have to use that needle over and over and over again. Okay? In the process, then, of looking at transmission now, we want to see how normally it's transmitted. It's transmitted by both homosexual and heterosexual practices. Okay, it's transmitted by IV drug use, transmitted by blood and blood products, and also transmitted from mother to infant in the developing child. It's also transmitted by mother nursing infant. So AIDS is transmitted in these fashions. Okay, as we go through this process now, let's look at the two basic problems that we have. How is it transmitted? How is it not transmitted? It's transmitted by sharing of needles. Well, in Africa and other parts of the world, you got a lot of tattooing. It's ritual. It's cultural. It's ethnic. It's all part of the growing up rites. There's also bloodletting ceremonies associated with that. And they're not using sterile equipment to do this. So it's just not IV drug users that are going to get it. People that are getting tattoos, that are exposed to blood of an individual that have it in the process of tattooing, I call it wet to blood, wet. Wet blood to wet blood will transmit the disease. And so it's transmitted when blood can be introduced into the bloodstream of somebody else, no matter through a ritual practice of tribes, tattooing, or the utilization of intravenous injections. Okay, having sex with somebody with AIDS. It's not only the homosexual, but it's also heterosexual. Okay, heterosexuals have much less AIDS than do homosexuals. Most of the heterosexuals may not be exposed as much. Another issue with the virus is how much virus does it take for you to get the disease? Okay, we'll look at that in just a minute as we go down through the list. A nursing mother that nurses the baby who has AIDS virus, generally they're IV drug users, but not always, okay, can give it to their baby. A baby can be born with AIDS. Okay, it can be transmitted because somebody has been artificially inseminated. There was donor semen given, and that semen was contaminated with the AIDS virus. Okay, now what's not up here is transfusion. Okay, before 1981, anybody being transfused with blood could have been receiving the AIDS virus. 1981, we introduced a testing system. Okay, it's the testing system for the AIDS antibody. It's not protective, but it gives us a mechanism to look for the AIDS antibody. The test is called a lady's name, LISA. Enzyme-linked immunoadsorbent assay. That's what it stands for. It's high technology. It's a biotechnology product. It gives us protection. The better test was developed in 1986, which is, but even then, with blood transfusion, you got one chance in 50,000. That's one chance in 10 to the minus 4 to get the disease from normal blood transfusion because the test is not complete. All right, what about the hemophiliacs? What do? They take 30 units of blood to concentrate the necessary blood product to give the hemophiliac so they can clot their blood and don't bleed to death. It's called factor 8. Well, we were initially doing that, didn't know in the process we were concentrating the AIDS virus. So as we began to understand this process, as we concentrated it, we now passed it through what? Same process we use for milk, pasteurization, heat it. destroy the AIDS virus by heating the factor 8 product so we can now give the hemophiliacs that factor 8. Okay, so that's blood, blood products, transfusion, in addition to what's up here. How can you not get it? Those are all the ways that you will not get AIDS. Now, is there absolutely no way that you're going to get it? No, nobody can say that. But I can't say you're not going to walk out here and there's going to be a brick fall off of this building and it's going to hit and kill you. Nobody can say that. You're not guaranteed even the next moments of life. Nobody can say absolutely none of this is going to happen. Let's go down here about insect bites, since this is one that people want to be concerned about. It's not like malaria, where the mosquito is part of the malarial life cycle. It's not even like that. It's got to be the insect bites, the female mosquito bites once. Now deposits that blood protein to lay her eggs in. It's not like they bite frequently. Since malaria is replicated inside of the mosquito, can be transmitted. There has been no mosquito transmission ever found, even in Belgrade, Florida, where they thought it may be happening. Even in the endemic area in Africa, it's not transmitted by insects. So there's been a lot of misinformation as we've tried to cope with this disease, and a lot of fear that has come forward. All right, all these contact sports, exchanging money, getting your hair done. A lot of homosexuals work in beauty parlors, right? You know that. What about ballets? A lot of ballet companies have many homosexuals in it. Okay? People that have lived with AIDS patients sharing a household have not come down with AIDS. And so they can share hairbrushes and towels. Okay? Drinking water, massage. You know, that's another homosexual behavior pattern. Massages. Okay? Sharing drinking water. But look at all the things that are not. Jacuzzi, saunas. What? Yes, AIDS virus is found in tears. Yes, AIDS virus is found in saliva. But the dose is not sufficient to be effective. It takes a lot of virus to cause the disease. Okay, let's look specifically now at the infection, which is really interesting to try to deal with. You can get the AIDS infection over here, and then there's a very long period before you express disease. Matter of fact, in the process, there's an incubation period now that we have to prolong up here to as much as 5 years. You may be carrying the infectious virus for a year to 5 years and not even know it. And you're not even seropositive. You can do the ELISA test and we won't find anything. Why? AIDS is a latent viral infection. Now we get into the alteration of the defense mechanism. We begin to see ARC, and then finally we see full-blown AIDS. We believe that this process may take as long as 8 years, maybe even 10 for some. So when you got people that are out here, that are in this phase right here, and they're infectious, that's concerning. They are carrying AIDS and they don't know it. And you don't know it either. In the process of dealing with this virus in terms of its molecular biology is very, very interesting. It's opposite of what most things do. Most viruses follow the molecular biology dogma. DNA makes new DNA, makes RNA to make protein. This virus does things backwards, hence it's called a retrovirus, the backwards virus. The virus gets in very specifically by recognizing the T helper cell, and you see these little pins here? Those little pins represent the receptors that attach to the same T4 macromolecule that we use to identify the T4 helper cell. That's how the AIDS virus gets in. It's very specific. It's as specific as you putting your key into the door to turn it. It's a very specific interaction. As it gets in now, what's it got to do? The RNA now has to synthesize a DNA. And that DNA-RNA hybrid does something very interesting. It integrates with the host chromosome and it stays there. And you can be AIDS infected and have no idea you've got it because it stays there as a latent virus infection. Along comes some infectious disease, say infectious mononucleosis, Kissing's disease, common in your age people. What does it do? And now allows this virus to break out to begin to replicate. And now that virus replicates its necessary RNA, replicates its necessary protein to make itself, and it comes back out. But in the process, what's it do to this cell? Destroys it. And that's the T4 helper cell. And without it, you're not protected against the viruses, the cancer, and those parasitic infections. Okay, now, we've tried to answer two questions now. We've tried to answer how the disease has come about. It's a virus disease that attacks the immune system, and it leads to death. It's transmitted by blood and semen, but it can also be transmitted from mother to child. Okay, what's the scope of AIDS? Where is it found? Okay? And there's a lot of information. Okay? There are 163 countries in this world. 130 have it. It's interesting, the process of countries studying it. Some countries refused to even test because they didn't want to know. I know the situation in Liberia because one of our missionaries is there. They tested one person. That one person was positive. They said, we don't want to do it anymore. So we don't know how many cases exist globally. We have no idea. The World Health Organization says there is 5 to 10 million. Reader's Digest says there's 100 million. We've had plagues before that destroyed literally millions of people. In the 1300s and the Dark Ages, we had the Black Plague. Estimated 25 million people died. During the age of the European exploration, the Europeans brought chickenpox, smallpox, and syphilis, and they killed millions of people all over the world in their explorations. World War II, we had a very interesting disease called swine influenza. You may have heard about that. You were around, some of you, in 1976 and heard about the swine vaccination project. We thought we were going to have it all over again. Killed 70 million people worldwide. So we've had epidemics before, and this is another one. This epidemic, before it's going to get done, it's going to kill millions of people. How many people are infected, we have no idea. Of the known cases, 75% of them are in North America, 15% are in Europe, 5% in Africa, 2% in South America, and Asia is just beginning to develop their AIDS epidemic. Now, as we look at the AIDS cases, you'll hear the same statistics you just heard. And they haven't changed much. This is 1985. They haven't changed much in terms of the percentage. The numbers have changed significantly. It's still primarily a homosexual male problem. Why? Because of the method they have sex. The genital urinary tract has a much different anatomical physiological feature than does the gastrointestinal tract. So that's one of the situations. Furthermore, their lifestyle and behavior. So that leads to another problem. Okay, IV drug users. Okay, transfusion, hemophiliacs, heterosexuals, AIDS offspring. So you can see the percentages that we're working. And there's even 7% unknown. Hospital workers that have had cuts, that have worked with AIDS patients and been bled on, and they have gotten AIDS. Laboratory workers working with the AIDS virus, trying to understand it, have gotten AIDS. Now, what is the origin of AIDS? Well, we know a little bit about what happened in the United States, but let me tell you some of the concepts. It's a biological warfare agent. People actually believe that. It came from outer space. People believe that. We believe it came from Western Africa. Matter of fact, Central Western Africa, maybe even Zaire. We're not sure. Nobody knows. The monkeys carry an AIDS-like virus. Okay? But it's not the AIDS virus. We believe that AIDS started in Africa, was carried to France. Very interesting person. He's called the Index Case, or Case Zero. You may have read about this French airline steward that had 40 heterosexual contacts all over the world that may have been one of the major AIDS spreaders. So it moved from France to the United States. In the process of that movement now, they came across the United States. Okay, I'm missing a slide, but that's okay. It came across the United States, and in the process, the virus changes, just like the influenza virus. It changes very quickly. That's how come we got problems with vaccines. It moved from Africa to France to New York to the West Coast. On the West Coast, It is a drug user disease. On the East Coast, in New York City. On the West Coast, it's a homosexual disease. Matter of fact, if we were to look at the homosexual population in San Francisco, in 1978, 1% are AIDS positive. They go back to old sera. 1980, 25%. 1984, 65%. 1985, 75%. Today, it's higher. I didn't read the data to see how much higher. In Africa, AIDS is a heterosexual problem. So we can't point to a specific group of people involved with the disease. Yes, the homosexual are the problem. Yes, the drug users are a problem. All right, the treatment of AIDS. There isn't any. We can only treat symptoms. Almost all these up here are used to treat the AIDS-related diseases. We can't treat the AIDS virus yet. We've tried. Matter of fact, Dr. Gottlieb, who used to be at UCLA, is trying to develop a vaccine, says the word cure isn't even in the vocabulary yet. There's no hope for a cure. ATZ. Okay, ATZ is an antiviral. It's helpful to a degree, but it doesn't really work well. And it's very expensive. And there's a lot of side reactions. There are some people doing well, some people not doing well. AIDS is a lifestyle disease. Okay? We know homosexual males, people 25 to 40 years old are the high-risk group with repeated sexual encounters. I have read of homosexuals or lifetime having encounters in the 20,000 categories. 20,000 different sex partners. Normal heterosexuals over a lifetime will have 50,000. Okay, AIDS is a lifestyle disease. But just so we don't get complacent, we need to look at ourselves. Okay, let me say some things. No to drugs, absolutely. And I don't care if it's even aspirin or anything else. You got to be careful with the drugs you're taking to have an effect on your body. It doesn't have to be cocaine. It can be many things that we would consider drugs. Cocaine and heroin, all the IV use, definitely no. Marriage. Sexual abstinence. No sex outside of marriage. We live in a society where that is rampant. Abstinence is not even normative. What are seven lifestyle factors that will help you understand what a homosexual goes through when they try to change their habits? If you have these seven lifestyle factors have been studied over the last 30 years. Three meals a day, don't snack. Raise your hand if you haven't had a snack in the last 2 days. Okay? A few of you. What's that going to do? That's called weight control, folks. You want to control your weight? Control what you're eating. In particular, control what you're snacking on. Breakfast every day. How many people didn't eat breakfast? My absolutely most important meal today. It takes you 9 hours to digest protein. If you got up this morning and had a cup of coffee and a donut, you didn't do your body any favor. That's not breakfast. You're almost asleep by now. Some of you are. Breakfast is critical. You've got to eat it. And I'm sorry for my Midwestern accent. I don't say breakfast right. Okay? It's called break the fast. Okay? Moderate exercise, 2 to 3 times a week. That doesn't mean you have to stand out there on your mat and jiggle exercise for 3 hours. That's wrong, too. And we're beginning to see the effects of some people that do that. Okay? Moderate exercise. No smoking. That's easy for a Christian. Let me ask you something. How many have smoked and quit? How many Christians? I can go to the South and I'll show you Southern Baptists are smoking cigarettes like crazy. They live in that environment. I know Southern Baptists have tried, pastors that have tried to quit smoking for years and years and years and can't. Habits are hard to break. Homosexual habits are incredible break. Okay. Moderate weight. Who makes the weight charts? The life insurance companies do. They just measure 6 million people. What are they? It's a predictor of your longevity. They measure 6 million people to find out you all are about 15 pounds overweight. Don't believe the weight charts. The average American is about 15 pounds overweight. So if you're going to look at the weight chart, look at the low end, not the high end. Now, I'm talking to myself a bit too, folks. Okay, alcohol. No alcohol or alcohol in moderation. Now, as a Christian, some of these are going to be pretty easy. Now, let me tell you, these lifestyle factors were studied over a 30-year period of time. And they studied a population. It's just like the cholesterol study in Framingham, Massachusetts. And it's interesting what population they studied. It was Contra Costa County. Where's that located? In San Francisco. I'd sure like to see some data over this next 30 years, because the last time they reported was in 1982. But what did they find? What did they find right here? People that had three of these had a life expectancy of another 22 years, but people that had six or seven of these had a life expectancy of another of 11 more years. I'll tell you, folks, have six or seven of these lifestyle factors, and you're going to have longevity. Does that guarantee anything? No. God could take you right now if he wants to. But there are things you can personally do. Habits are hard to change, and they're hard to make. It takes 6 to 11 weeks to break a habit. Okay, those that didn't eat breakfast, start eating it tomorrow. It's probably going to make you sick. But in the process, you will add another one of those lifestyle factors. Okay? So there are concerns that we've got to have. AIDS is a sexually transmitted viral disease. There's no question about it. And it's going to kill millions of people before it's done. We don't know who's got it. We do have some diagnostic tools that will help us. AIDS is transmitted primarily by homosexuals in their acts. It's also found in IV drug use. But that's not the whole story. What about all those innocents? The transfusions, the hemophiliacs, the children. And you heard about some of these children. You saw those pictures? 200 people were pictured there. Not all of them, all of them were homosexuals. Some of them went to the hospital for the surgery and got a blood transfusion to get AIDS. Okay, who gets AIDS? Anybody at risk? Lifestyle was sex outside of marriage and use of drugs. Homosexual said sex is absolutely forbidden. Matter of fact, sex outside of marriage is absolutely forbidden by Scripture. These are sins, and there are great judgments for sin. In particular, the AIDS patients are going to have grave consequences. But isn't it nice that we have a God that cares? We are sitting here because of God's grace. And by God's grace, hopefully, nobody in this room has got AIDS. And you know the things you can do to prevent yourself from getting it. But what happens if you want to be a nurse? What happens if you want to be a doctor working with those folks? What are the precautions you need to take? What are the precautions you folks need to take because of your lifestyle to prevent you from getting a disease like this? Well, we got problems. We need encouragement. We need one another. I'm glad you were all sitting here side by side among friends. This is a group of people you can go to converse about the problems of life. And we need to be encouraged by one another as we face the trials of life. And maybe we have those tendencies to have relationships with the same sex. Maybe we even have those tendencies to have relationships with a man or a woman outside of marriage. And we need to be able to come and say, I got these kinds of problems. I need to receive your encouragement. God does that. Because when he sent his son to die on the cross, he died for all, not just the Christians. The AIDS situation then needs our concern, our prayer, because there will be consequences.